$2.5 million donation, citing, quote, disappointing results in these lawsuits. Do you think there might be other such lawsuits, and do they have any chance of winning?
Yeah, so that lawsuit actually pertains to a separate group, True the Vote, which also took money from Eshelman, or which took money from Eshelman with promises to try and overturn the election results, and of course failed. I think a distinction between where a lot of the money is coming from for Trump's leadership PAC and Eshelman is that a lot of the money for Trump is coming from small donors, from people who may not have the resources to sue Trump or to really even identify that their money is being misused. I think that's part of what's unique about this, because typically candidates have an incentive to maintain a level of trust with their supporters. They might use inflammatory fundraising appeals, but they want maintain a level of trust so people keep giving. Of course, Trump is the person who said he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and still maintain a level of support. And this post-election fundraising might just be the political version of that.
We want to thank you, Brendan Fischer, Director of Federal Reform at Campaign Legal Center. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM and K282BH Philomath at 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. The time is 7:59 a.m. Next up, we have Too Much Information with Abe and Tracy.
Good morning. You're listening to Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM. My name's Abe Proctor, and sitting across the digital divide from me, my erstwhile co-host, Tracy Simmons. Good morning.
Good morning, Abe. Good morning, listeners.
It's been quite a week, Tracy.
Oh, my goodness. It's never a dull moment around these parts. I just think about our show's name, Too Much Information, and I am feeling a sense of overwhelm at all of the information coming my way. I'll just start with a head and desk moment of $600. So last night, yesterday sometime, the Senate passed this omnibus bill, which included some COVID-19 relief. We're all excited about this. I'm not quite sure. But it is wholly insufficient and wrapped in, a $1.4 trillion spending bill that has all kind of other weird stuff in it. And $900 billion of it is in COVID aid. But of that $900 billion, we should expect, some of us, I'll just talk about it in more detail in just a moment, should expect maybe to get a pittance of $600. So basically, your relief is going to come in the form of a nice Gucci belt.
Ooh. It's a birthday Zoom meeting.
The last few times I went to go get groceries, it has been in the hundreds of dollars for just a few bags of groceries. Right now, I don't know exactly the cost of gas because I'm not going very far, but it is something like, I think it was like $2.90 something cents the last time I got gas. The cost of living is so expensive, and we've been without any support for 9 months. And now we're supposed to get maybe $600. So I'm just kind of apoplectic. I'm really irritated. But let's talk about this COVID-19 relief. So instead of the $600 that was being seen by people in an extra benefit for unemployment insurance, it's been cut in half to $300 per week. And it extends the maximum period for state-paid jobless benefits to 50 weeks as opposed to 26 weeks, which is, of course, half a year. And it's, of course, been more than half a year that we've been in this very dire situation for COVID-19. And those direct payments, it provides $600 direct payments to individuals making up to $75,000 per year and couples making $150,000 per year. With payments phased out for higher income. So if you make much over than that, you might not get anything. And then $600 per an additional payment per dependent child. Once again, ridiculous, fully insufficient. More money is being put into the Paycheck Protection Program, which also, you know, we know that, you know, Kanye West got like $4 billion out of that. And it didn't come out very equitable the last time around, and we should expect that it won't come out this time. And so we know that, you know, the hard hit businesses, those businesses that are smaller businesses that don't have access to big banks, did not get much of that money to begin with. And so we'll see what happens this time around. I'm not very hopeful, because I just know how these things all roll out. And of course, people who are attached to the government seem to get nice big handouts, and people who don't seem to need it as much are getting payments out of this to protect their businesses that are multi-million-dollar businesses. Some money for vaccines, testing, and for health providers in the form of $69 billion, which doesn't also seem like enough. Some money to schools and universities is $82 billion. So deliver $54 billion to K-12 schools. Some rental assistance money. As we know, the average arrearage for Americans right now with regard to back rent is somewhere in the thousands. And there's a $25 billion provision of money for rental assistance to be distributed by state and local governments. For folks who have fallen behind on their rent. That will get swallowed up within moments, I can just tell you right now. And then there's some food and farm aid, some additional provision of resources and food stamps, so 15% for 6 months increase. And then there's some child care and postal service spending there too. But the whole bill, right, the omnibus appropriations are $1.4 trillion, and in that, $900 billion is going to this thing that we have done nothing about. So if you just calculate it out since March, right, you know, we're going into January here and literally being just fed peanuts. And it is very sad. I'm pretty irritated. And I'll just finish with that for now. How are you, Abe?
Well, I was doing okay. I should mention the number to call is 503-231-8187 if you want to take part in this conversation. Very interested to hear what people think about this piece of legislation and whether it's adequate for the moment we're in, and also hear your thoughts about it vis-a-vis what other national governments have done. You mentioned, Tracy, when you were running through the different items in the bill, some money for state and local governments who, of course, lack the ability to go into debt to cover their expenses the way the federal government can. So what can state and local governments expect in terms of continuing to provide frontline health care for people suffering from COVID-19 and also dealing with the epidemic of evictions that is happening despite prohibitions to the contrary?
Well, there is no additional spending for local and state governments outside of this $900 billion kind of pass-through. So the state will get some money from the appropriations from that rental assistance to their state for the state to figure out how to distribute it. But they're not getting additional funding to actually keep the state running. And so these are pass-through funds that go to the state but then have to be distributed to people. And so the state governments are still going to be in a challenging situation where they're trying to do what they can for their citizens, but the federal government is not really supporting them directly. And so we just have the long-term outlook on this is that we will need the Biden administration to get in there January 20th and turn something around really quickly. And we need those Georgia runoff seats to enable us to move anything forward. Because this, once again, wholly, insufficient. It has all this other stuff in there because, of course, the Republicans are not going to pass anything for the people without giving themselves a tax break for lunches. And, it's just...
Right. Yeah, tell us about that provision. That was a particularly delicious one, I thought.
That is their three martini lunch where they have the ability to write off, and just to be honest, Congress members make about $600 per day. So you just, level that up for yourself right now. But, they go to these fancy lunches on a regular basis, and this allows them to write off three martinis in that. And so in the past, you haven't been able to write off alcohol on public funds, and it seems like now they'll be able to do that so they can smooge their donors. And, of course, we all needed that, right? We all needed that.
Yeah. Progress. Progress at long last.
What other...
Right. They seized on this, right, as a means of supporting the struggling restaurant industry, right? And it is all of us who love the restaurant scene here in Portland. What we miss most, of course, is rubbing elbows with well-heeled corporate CEOs at lunch.
Let's talk about some of the other stuff that's in here. So there's a anti-busing action. You can't use federal funds for transportation costs to carry out desegregation efforts. Interesting. The 3% military pay raise and preserves a 1% pay raise for federal civilian employees for next year. There's some support for museums. There's some information and work there to restrict access to e-cigarettes. It's just bizarre kind of how all these things have been thrown in together. Overall, what we know is that there's also $1.4 billion in cash for Trump's southern border wall and then some new border processing coordinators. So it's a continuation of the Trump administration. And the Republicans who were at the table, of course, because they are so sycophant to Trump, had to throw in some stuff that would make him happy because he's going to have to sign off on this bill. And so what's interesting is I'm hearing in my progressive spaces like Pelosi, Schumer, all of this kind of pointing the finger at the people who basically had their hands tied to be able to do even a $600 support for American families. And of course, not all American families. But there's just this weird focus on the people who were basically held hostage by Republicans to go ahead and push something through. And we're going to be in that same place if we don't get these Georgia House seats Senate seats, because what will happen is that we will continue, negotiating our interests away to Republican interests.
Let's dig in on that a little bit, because it seems to me like this is a window that's ripe for finger pointing on all sides, right? Well, the big question, why didn't we get relief sooner to people who desperately have needed it, who have needed it for months and months? And of course, both sides are pointing fingers. We know that the House passed a incredibly comprehensive relief package back in the spring, and which has gone to the graveyard of bills on Mitch McConnell's desk. We also know that here, as seemingly at the last minute, we've had the ice break and a compromise being reached, but it begs a number of questions, most prominent of which is, why didn't the ice break earlier? Why couldn't they have reached some sort of compromise? And further, why, now that the ice is broken, did everything seem to fall so far out of working people's grip? I mean, why didn't this break in favor of ordinary Americans is what I'm wondering.
Well, if you know or have been paying attention to Republicans for the last 40 years, they have...
Well, yeah, it's a bit of a rhetorical question, I suppose.
Regular Americans. And for me, this signals to me that the people who could benefit the most from any resources and support, really, I mean, I don't know what else they need to see. That they continue to put these people in office who do not care one lick about their interests, do not care one iota about if they're going to survive this pandemic or not. I mean, and if we even extend that into thinking about survival and where we are in this moment, it's so interesting to see some of these people who have aided and abetted the virus for the last 9 months, but in the line, right? They jump to the front of the line and put their arm out there to get their vaccine. And it's just kind of, you know, what they are showing you is everything that you need to see to make, you know, concerted efforts and good decisions about who you place your trust in going forward in the electoral space. I mean, it just is, it's ridiculous. So another thing about this is that this bill is over, you know, almost 6,000 pages long. And it was delivered to the Congress and the Senate within hours of a vote coming up. And so they didn't even really have time to look at it, but neither did we. And these are the issues that we need to be bringing forward as, you know, concerned citizens, as progressives, to say, this needs to stop. If you want to push something like this through for $1.4 trillion, you need to slow down. You need to stop sneaking in crazy stuff like, 100% write-off for Republican luncheons. You know, it's just ridiculous that then our Congress members are being held, you know, hostage to it. We know we need relief, so they go ahead and vote it in, and all this random stuff that's attached to it gets voted in, too. And we don't even, as you know, citizens have the ability to know what's in there and contact our Congress people and say, hey, don't vote for this. No, this needs to be negotiated. This is not okay. But no, we don't even have that opportunity. And so the bad things that are in this bill are going to get signed off because they are Trumpian, and he will support it. And he knows that, you know, his last opportunity to give out checks with his name on it are in this bill. And so I think he's going to sign it, but we know that there's some really crummy stuff in there, deep buried in that 6,000 pages.
So what this amounts to is a massive dereliction in duty from what purportedly is the greatest country on earth. An absolute abdication of any responsibility for the citizenry. Like you put your finger on it early on, I think. $600 is laughable. That is laughable, considering we're going to be more than a year into this pandemic, I think, before we can even begin to approach something like normal life once again, when enough people are finally vaccinated. And there seems to be some early troubles in distribution of the vaccines, and we'll get to that in a little bit. So it's going to be a while, right? And the idea that $600 is going to get us through, I mean, what world are these people living in? And to give you just an example of not just how elected Republicans are thinking and behaving on this, but, you know, run-of-the-mill conservatives. I've got a friend on social media, and I'm sure a lot of you have friends like this, from way back, somebody whose political views I absolutely disagree with, but I'm not willing to ditch them simply because of a disagreement in political views. He owns a small business, and he has been ranting recently about how his tax dollars the indebtedness of his future grandchildren are going to go right now to support people who don't pay any federal income taxes and are too lazy to get up and go to work. And I was trying to explain to him that the phrase he used was, yeah, right now people are getting too much in unemployment business benefits to bother getting a job, and employers are not able to find people to work. And I'm trying to tell him, we're paying people to stay home. We are incentivizing people not to work, because the prevailing factor
of our existence right now is an airborne viral pandemic, and people have to stay home. But he can't get out of his ideological box long enough to understand that there are values at play that transcend the needs of the market, that transcend the needs of capitalism and his imperatives as an owner in that system. I mean, it's astonishing for a nation that purports to be as enlightened as we do, that boasts about being the first of the modern democracies, that swears over and over and over again that it's the greatest country the world has known and will ever know, can't even take care of its citizens in the midst of a widespread disease. It seems like a no-brainer to me. And the fact that we're not able to do it, yes, is indicative of flaws in the system, but I think it's even more indicative of deep flaws in our collective ideology and how too many of us view the world.
Yeah, I think that individualism, you know, kind of rugged individualism that we kind of purport to be part of American values really skews our ability to be a society based on social bonds, based on social care and concern, because it's, you know, kind of just opposed, completely opposed to that different ideology of doing what we can for the common good, as opposed to every individual for themselves. And I think that is also rooted in the dominant culture and white supremacy. And so we've all been kind of indoctrinated into that kind of thinking, every man for themselves, because it feels comfortable that then I don't have to worry about other people, or I can make judgments on other people and why they're not able to succeed in the same economy that I'm so successful in, right? And so it allows us to dismiss other people. I think what's interesting about this $600 is that here in Portland, the median rent is $1,155. And so this $600 won't even cover a person's rent for a month. I mean, it's laughable, it's ridiculous, and it's sad all at the same time, because we know even in this bill the eviction moratorium will end at the end of January 2021. So January 31st is what it's been pushed to at this point. And we just know that there will be mass evictions. Thank goodness Portland and the state of Oregon have extended that out. But it just kicks the can down the road, and then you have people with tens and, you know, thousands of dollars of rent arrearages. And so, you know, $25 billion for a country of 330 million people will go very quickly when we're talking about, you know, just keeping people housed.
Yeah, it's an absolute dereliction of duty. You're absolutely correct. And the example I keep going back to is Denmark. The Danish government at the onset of this pandemic committed to its citizens that they would back their salaries, usually at around 90% of their salary, depending on how much people made, and pay them to stay home for the duration of the pandemic. They also did this not just to look after the welfare of their citizens, but so that the relationship between employer and employee remained intact. It didn't have to be severed, so that when this is all over, people still have jobs. They still have an employer. The employer still has workers. Everybody has a place to go back to when this is all over. And they made that commitment at the very beginning for the duration, which is, of course, you know, what any rational, clear-eyed humanitarian government would do under these circumstances. And the rebuttal to this that I've encountered many times since the outcome of the pandemic goes something like this: well, Denmark is much smaller than we are, and they're also much more racially and culturally homogenous, so it's easier for them to do these things. So, you know, what does that mean exactly? What? Because we're a large, multicultural, multiracial society, we can't have nice things? I mean, this is nonsense.
Absolutely, but I mean, that's where we see that kind of white supremacist kind of bent to our country coming in at every possible way it can sneak in, it does. And so we don't treat each other as full humans because we don't see each other as full humans. I want to shift a little bit to think about what Oregon did in their end of their special session yesterday. So, of course, at the beginning of the session, Oregon State Police had declared an unlawful assembly as a growing number of white ring protesters demanded entry into the closed Capitol. People are doing this work, but of course the Capitol has been closed for some time, and of course they start vandalizing. Who knows if you know, the same treatment as the Portland protesters downtown during the George Floyd protests over the summer.
Oh yeah. So they were breaking out the gas and the nightsticks and the shields and the tanks and all that?
We were protesting a lockdown that never happened. How are we in lockdown when you can go wherever you want? I mean, come on now. They just asked us to wear a mask. Anyways, I don't want to focus on those idiots. So House Bill 4401 extended a statewide moratorium on evictions until the 1st of July. And so the eviction ban had been scheduled to last January 1st. So they did that just in time. There's also a $150 million fund to help landlords whose tenants have been able to unable to pay the rent. So the landlords will get some relief here, which is probably helpful to them, but I don't know how helpful it is to the actual people who come July might be evicted still. And so the measure allows landlords to seek up to 80% of their unpaid rent. And so there's also a part of this that has $50 million to help tenants directly pay their rent. Like I said, those numbers seem large, but when we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people with lots of thousands of dollars of back rent owed, it goes real quick. So we'll see how that all works out for our people. I feel like at least our Oregon legislature was doing what they can. But what's interesting about this, and I will continue naming names in this case. I don't want to go on a rant naming names, but the bill passed the House in Oregon by a 39-15 margin, and the senators passed the bill with an 18-6, with one Republican voting with the Democrats. Not one of the 15 House Republicans voted on this bill. And once again, we have to ask, who is really being harmed in the state of Oregon? We know rural Oregonians are more often going to vote with Republicans, and I'm not quite sure why, but Republicans do not have their back. Why do they keep doing this? These are the people who are struggling the most, rural Oregonians. And so it's just very interesting to see this kind of, you know, this ideology that you speak of, Abe, play out in the minds of people who say, oh, I'm voting Republican every time. And every time the Republicans have an opportunity to actually help people, they choose not to. And so this bill is really being supported by Oregon Democrats who want to see some relief for our people. And it's just, you know, it will beg me the question over and over again, why do we continue to vote in Republicans when they have no interest in serving the common good?
Well, I'm just going to take a stab at that one and say it might be the racism. I don't know. Well, let's go to the phone. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is Too Much Information with Abe and Tracy on KBOO 90.7 FM. Let's go to Harry. Good morning.
Good morning, Abe and Tracy and everyone. Thank you for taking my call. I think the Democrats and Pelosi made a big mistake on passing this bill and the previous bill funding the military. They should have shut down the government. And why should they do that? Well, because McConnell, since July, has been fighting them about this relief bill. If they shut down the government and didn't pass this bill and didn't pass, well, we'll have to wait till Biden comes to becomes president. But before Biden becomes president, we have the Georgia election. Now everyone's looking forward to, oh, we should win that election. I'm talking about the Democrats should win that election, but the odds are against them. It takes the Democrats two wins in Georgia to win. It takes the Republicans just two wins or one win to control the Senate still. So, and if that happens when Biden becomes president and the Senate is in Republican hands, what do you think McConnell's going to be doing? He's going to be stopping everything that Biden wants to do. And the only way to put any type of pressure on him would be if he didn't pass the military budget, And if he didn't pass this one, now the pressure is on him to come with something. But if, you know, so that's why I feel they shouldn't have. They should shut down the government. Of course, everyone was thinking, well, it'll be bad for the next election. No, because look at how many times Republicans shut down the government and never paid a political price. Everyone forgets.
I would disagree with that. I said every time they've done that, in the next election, they pay for it.
Yeah, but, I mean, look in the past. They didn't seem to. I mean, but anyway, I feel that Nancy Pelosi should have shut down the government because it's going to be, I mean, I hope, you know, and the Democrats win the Georgia election, but they have to win both. So it's going to be pretty tough. What say you? What's your opinion on that?
Well, I want to first thank you very much for the call. My opinion is that I would love it if the Democrats had the collective spine to grab the Defense Department and yank really hard on that lever. If they had the courage to hold up a defense spending bill and use it as a tool to negotiate for better, for example, just one example, a better COVID relief package for the American people, not to mention things like universal health care and better transportation and on and on. If they were willing to do that, I would applaud them. But I think they lack the collective spine to do that, not only because Democrats in office tend to wilt whenever the opposition starts, waving the flag and using patriotism as a hammer, and that's exactly what would happen if they tried to oppose a defense spending bill. And secondly, too many Democrats are beholden to donors from the defense industry. So as much as I would like to see that happen, I think it's a non-starter. And I am generally opposed to the strategy of shutting down the federal government. The government is there to serve the people, and it can't do that if it's not, the doors aren't open.
I absolutely agree that, yeah, shutting down the government right now as we're trying to, you know, establish a mechanism for distributing vaccines in the middle of a pandemic where many people are currently out of work anyway, and putting our government workers out of work, and I'm not talking about senators and the Congress people, I'm talking about the actual regular Americans who work in the government. I think that would not have been a winning strategy. I do understand what you're saying, though, right? There has to be some leverage over Mitch McConnell. But I feel promised in the Georgia runoff elections. I think there's been something like over 1 million registered voters who have, have already even voted, I believe. And so that's moving along. We'll see what happens. We know about Republican shenanigans in these kind of high-stakes elections, so I'm sure everyone will be watching for that. But I will just say Stacey Abrams and her Fair Fight work is actually producing results, and so I'm hopeful about that. I also don't think that we could wait until after January 20th. People are starving right now. It's the holiday season. People are trying to do what they can to keep their families afloat. And so I feel like, you know, shutting down the government and then kind of sitting on this as a leverage point really would harm more people.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Squirrel. Squirrel, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to say happy second longest day of the year, actually second shortest day of the year to everybody. But Abe, you mentioned something about your buddy on social media or wherever, however you know him, mm-hmm. who is a business owner who complains about these poor people who don't pay any taxes. Well, what about the billionaires that don't pay any taxes? They're the ones with all the money. And I say, tax those son of a guns at 50%, and you know what? They're still going to have more money than they can ever spend in their lifetimes, and we'd have some dough for education, for health care, for bailing out the people who actually really could use a bailout instead of these billionaires who don't pay a nickel. It's ridiculous. And
absolutely.
And yesterday, these knuckleheads storming the state capitol with their guns. I mean, you know, it's funny. I've been protesting my whole life. And, you know, one thing I've never taken to a protest is a gun. So I just, anyway. So that's it. Happy holidays to y'all. Wear your mask and all that stuff. Take care.
Hey, thanks, man. Appreciate the call. I read Robert Reich, the former Secretary of Labor under the Bill Clinton administration, also former Chancellor of the University of California, brilliant dude, wrote a column for The Guardian a couple weeks ago in which he noted that America's billionaires could write a check for $3,000 to every American household and still have more money than they did before the COVID-19 pandemic began. So if any questions arise about how we of a liberal bent plan to pay for all our big ideas and our big government programs, there's your answer. Tax the rich.
Yeah, I absolutely believe and side with Pearl on this one. You know, for me, every multimillionaire and billionaire is a policy failure. That either, you know, people weren't paying their workers enough, people weren't paying taxes into the system that supports us all. You know, it's one of many different policy failures that we see. And there could be some right sizing to that if we had the ability to get Republicans out of the way to build a system that was more equitable.
You know, that's a great way to frame it. Every billionaire is a policy failure. I really like that. That's really good. Now, Squirrel mentioned the protesters down in Salem yesterday. This is something that made its way into the national news. There were about 300 of them, and you talked about this as well earlier, Tracy, many of whom were armed. They tried to force their way into a couple different entrances of the Capitol, and you brought up, again, the question of, you know, were they met with the same sort of tactics that the Portland police likes to deploy on a nightly basis here in town? Well, as you can imagine, the short answer is no. Apparently, there was some mace that was deployed, but it was the protesters who deployed it, and also some smoke. Also deployed by the protesters. At one point in the a report from the Salem Statesman Journal, they say that state troopers retaliated with what they called inert pepper balls, which kind of sounds like a particularly unfortunate medical condition, but I think refer to these tiny packets of cayenne pepper that are shot at people and they sting and they help disperse a crowd. So again, as you suggested, Tracy, one might expect, you know, a markedly different response if it were a different group of protesters protesting a different issue. Yet another example of, one might say, perhaps the true priorities of law enforcement in action.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's see. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Tracy, earlier at the top of the show, you mentioned the vaccine line jumpers, the line steppers, who are showing up to get vaccinated. Let's talk a little bit more about that. What's your take on it?
Oh, my goodness. If you know, I have to see Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio, and I've already seen Marco Rubio and Mike Pence get their vaccines. But it is really a slap in the face for people who said, you know, oh, this is like the flu, or, oh, open up the country, we've got to open up. And to see them all step in front of our healthcare workers and our elderly folks who are disproportionately impacted and harmed. We know that there's also a disproportionate impact on communities of color, so Black, Indigenous, Latinx communities. We've seen, you know, the numbers in Oregon, and we know our Latinx and Hispanic community is suffering way worse under COVID-19. And we also know that these vaccines could be distributed to people who really matter. But because we have really, in our country, kind of assembled around this idea of a hierarchy of human value, our lawmakers are seen as outsized to the rest of us, and then we must, you know, go forth and make sure that they are safe. And what's interesting, as you look at their behavior for the last, you know, 9 months, what you've seen is, you know, Mike Pompeo throwing Christmas parties, you know, Donald Trump having super spreader events, Mike Pence having super spreader events. We know that there's been a recent reporting of some emails going between folks in the Trump administration about, yes, we need them all sick, as they were trying to follow this, you know, whack job ideology around herd immunity. But you know, I am a public health major. And what's interesting about even the concept of herd immunity is that it is conferred by vaccines, right? Vaccines right. confer immunity, not people getting sick of a virus, because especially if you don't know what that virus is, you don't know what the immunity period is or if there even is one. So the whole idea of these people who literally have aided and abetted, they have been pro-virus in their behavior and the things that they have said and the ways in which they have manipulated the public trust of you know, scientists now getting a vaccine. It's a slap in the face. It really makes me quite angry. It chaps my hide, Abe.
Yeah, you're not alone. You're not alone in that, Tracy. Iowa Senator Joni Ernst, who's quite a piece of work, early on in the pandemic, said that COVID-19 was fake, that it was invented by doctors so that they could collect more in fees from the private insurance industry and from Medicare. So it was invented by physicians so that they could make more money. And then yesterday she posted a picture of herself proudly showing off the Band-Aid covering her brand new vaccination scar. So yeah, Senator Ernst, I don't think you're quite cutting the mustard there. Yeah, you're right. It's absolutely hypocritical. These vaccines should go, with a very, very, very few exceptions, to people who need them the most, people who are dealing with COVID patients day to day, people who are working at care facilities, people who are selling you your groceries. You know, these are the folks that should get this vaccine. Now, you can make a very limited case on the grounds of continuity of government, right? You know, Vice President Pence, however nauseating the spectacle of him receiving the vaccine might be, he's the Vice President of the United States. He should probably be immunized against COVID-19, right? You can make that argument. But Marco Rubio, Joni Ernst, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, and I got a question, because right now I'm hearing that Trump is not wanting to talk to the media about whether or not he's getting the vaccine. And so that's just interesting. Makes me wonder what's going on there, because I don't trust him as far as I could throw him, and that means not at all. So I wonder what's going on there. Kind of just, you know, even thinking through, you know, why that strategy. I saw Joe Biden get his vaccine. I know that other presidents, former presidents, said that they would all get their vaccines on TV to, you know, really try and boost public trust of the vaccine as not a mechanism to deliver some kind of radio tracking or frequency device to track Americans. You know, there's, you know, the QAnons are all out there. There's the weird conspiracy theories around this. And of course, we've got the anti-vaxxers as well, who think at, you know, 45 they might get, you know, autism from a vaccine. I don't know. But what you see is that, yeah, people are trying to enhance the public trust, but some of these people are the very same people who put us in this perilous situation. So for me, it's just like, eyes roll, very frustrating.
Oh, they're contemptible hypocrites. You're absolutely right. Yeah, but you're also right that, you know, it is important to boost public trust, particularly within specific communities. I'm thinking of African-Americans in particular who have very reasonably grounded historical fears and historical reasons to distrust the medical establishment. You know, so that's why Representative Jim Clyburn from South Carolina filmed himself getting the vaccine and explicitly said to African-Americans, you need this, you can trust this, you can get this. That's a pretty important message. And in my mind, well worth Jim Clyburn getting an early dose of the vaccine. but again, sorry, Marco Rubio. Sorry, man. Let's go to the phones. Steve, you're next. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate everything that you guys are saying today. Interestingly enough, I'm a Portland native, 59 years old. So this is really irritating to me, and I share your female partner's view, as I'm very angry. On the stimulus, this is why I'm very angry, and I don't know if it affects a lot of people, but it affects me, and I believe I'm not the only one in the barrel. According to the stimulus from the federal government as a result of me owing back child support on a kid that I never had any relationship with in my life. They took the entire 12, they being the state of Oregon, took my entire federal subsidized $1,200 check last time, and I expect them to do the same. So it's interesting, the Constitution has cruel and unusual punishment protections under the Eighth Amendment, yet the very government, and I have to say at this point, Kate Brown in the state of Oregon, implementing laws that take people's money, especially like this in times of a pandemic crisis, to pay back debt, even if the debt isn't affirmed or, you know, is challenged. But anyway, I really appreciate what you're saying. And I wanted to bring that up and get that out into the sphere too, because I'm not the only person that's had their stimulus stolen by the state government from the federal government because of owing the state a few dollars.
Well, I mean, I don't know enough about your situation, the specific of your case, to really say. And I want to thank you very much for the call. But I think there is some logic to what you say. I'm not absolving you of your need to pay your child support arrears. But I think in time of pandemic and of lockdown and so on, lockdown being said in air quotes, of course, you're perhaps a little leniency ought to be offered there. You want to say something, Tracy?
Yeah, I mean, I have
my female partner.
I have interesting thoughts about child support, we don't have 30 minutes to go through that today, but it is an interesting aspect of social control, right? So we say women have bodily autonomy, and I feminist in the room, hopefully you don't get after me because I'm also a feminist, but I have this idea about how we use child support as a form of social control. Because women have bodily autonomy, we have the ability to have a baby without a partner even knowing or being, you know, a part of that outside of, you know, actual act of becoming pregnant. And so we can have a child, and it's now our child, and then we can point the finger at someone and say, that's them, that's the daddy, and the state goes after them. And people have been locked up. People are literally on state supervision for the whole life of that child, and even beyond that child's life, or, you know, while that child becomes an adult, for this money that's somehow owed to the state. And once again, it goes back to not believing in collective social bonds. We point fingers at individuals and say, that is your responsibility. Now, of course, I am a mother. I have, you know, fantastic relationships with the people who are in my life, including my children, and I had provided for them, but I was a single mom for a while, and I didn't have the support of baby daddy. And that is a hard thing to do. I never used, you know, state help, because I never, you know, could kind of jump through all the hoops to be able to do that. So I never had anybody on paperwork for my situation. But I do know of many people, specifically men of color, who are in these situations, where they will never be free or liberated or be able to collect a tax refund. The wages are being garnished over and over again because we don't have a collective ideology within our nation around supporting children when they are alive, right? So we have all of this work that's being done to stop people's bodily autonomy, you know, anti-abortion, really it's anti-choice if you ask me, work that's being done. To stop people from being able to end a pregnancy that they know they probably aren't going to be able to provide what they need to for a child. And so it's just so lopsided that those people who then decide, I'm going to have this child without even conferring with the person who is sperm donor in that situation, then is pretty much trapped for the rest of their life for money that, you know... I don't know. I haven't fully formed my opinion on this, but I do think it is part of the carceral system. It links up there. It links up to not ever being able for a person to be self-actualized because they have this money hanging out there. And I think it is very individual, right? That, of course, a person who is in a deep and meaningful relationship and walks away from a child, right, a marriage or something like that, and doesn't pay the support, is a little different from a person who has no relationship beyond the act that, you know, kind of procreated right. child. So, I mean, I think it's fascinating. I'm going to continue thinking through my thoughts on that, but there's a there.
I agree. Appreciate yeah, I agree. We don't go that deep into it.
I wasn't trying to make my case like this reason to talk about because I want to stay on subject. And it was about agreeing with you that the people leading this country are taking all of our money and taxes and putting it aside for times like this. But now we're seeing that they didn't. And when it comes to giving some money back to the very people that they're getting the money from, they're not willing to do that. They'd rather for the people to die. And on top of that, like you said, it's interesting how if you take one billionaire and write $3,000 check, multiply that by the amount of billionaires in this United States, you're right. They could do that if they had the heart and the will, but it's obvious even the Bloomberg getting up there saying, I'm going to run against Donald Trump on my own money. And then all of a sudden he gets not progressed forward and he just disappears with all of his money. And people need what you said so clearly. Each billionaire right now could write a $3,000 check to every American and still make money through this pandemic. And as a veteran, that sickens me. As a combat medic, that sickens me because the oath is do no harm. And you've got money to save people you're watching die, and you're sitting back waiting on other people, the government, to do it when you yourself could do it. I agree with this program with KBOO. I'm proud that KBOO's in my city, and I'm proud that KBOO has the spine to speak back to power. And I thank you so much for your answer today, even though I brought up child support. But thank you.
That's okay, man. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah, it sounds like a subject we might want to revisit at some time, Tracy, but we're certainly not going to be able to parse through child support as we know it today. Mark writes to the program to say 100% of COVID cash should go to individuals without income. No aid to businesses, since without people, all a business is assets, which can wait. Rent for individuals and small businesses should be suspended. Capital, which is generally amassed by well-off people, can wait for rent. I think that's spot on. Thank you for that, Mark. So let's go to Barry. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for your show. I always appreciate it. I just have a quick question. With this new stimulus, the one thing I haven't heard of mentioned is the student loan forbearance that we've been receiving. Will that continue, or is that in the dumpster too?
That is not in this bill. Thank you for asking. But no, it's not in this bill. There's nothing about the student loan forbearance. That, by Betsy DeVos, was extended to January 31st. But there is nothing in this new bill that goes over that or that extends it any further. So what's interesting is that we have a nominee now named Cardona, I believe, of Connecticut, has been named as the nominee, I believe, or the person who's the front runner for the Secretary of Education under the Biden administration, and is a former teacher, principal, and now a leader of a district in Connecticut. And so that person might be charged with, as soon as, you know, things get rolling, to either extend or do some work in that space. But for now, we're looking at January 31st, that forbearance being lifted and getting back the payments sometime in February. So that is also why I say that this bill is totally insufficient when we think about actual humans being able to survive the next at least 5 months of this pandemic.
Thank you very much. Tell me, I'm not surprised, and I appreciate your giving me understanding on the subject. Keep going, guys. Lovely show. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hey, thanks very much. So you mentioned appointments to Joe Biden's cabinet, and also Biden himself gave a statement, I think it was either late yesterday or early today, that he supports this compromise piece of disaster relief legislation, but that he doesn't believe it's sufficient, and he characterized it as a down payment on something else to come after he takes office. But it seems to me that that stance, you know, however much it might make sense and however optimistic it might be, is predicated entirely upon winning these two Senate runoff seats in Georgia. And for those of you who might be listening, sort of throwing up your hands going, why does it have to be this complicated? This is stupid. Why should the well-being of all Americans hinge on what happens in two Senate races in Georgia? Yes, yes, it's dumb. We should be smarter than this. We should be better than this. We should have a more responsive, more accessible system than this. But this is the one that we have. So as we mentioned the past several weeks on the show, we want to give you the tools, those of you who have a little disposable income to play with, and it's probably not a lot of you in these times, but nonetheless, every little bit is going to help to win these races in Georgia. I want you to consider for just a moment what might be possible if those two seats are won. I know that many of you are very cynical about the Democratic Party and what it's capable of producing on behalf of the American people. And I share that cynicism. But I can tell you without hesitation that what's possible with Democratic control of the Senate dwarfs what's possible with Mitch McConnell sitting at the steering wheel. So once again, if you want to get involved and support those Senate campaigns, here are a few good ways to do it. VoteSaveAmerica.com will let you enable you to make direct monetary contributions to each of those campaigns if you want. Perhaps more importantly, it will connect you with organizers on the ground so you can take part in phone banking and in text banking and in other ways to support that campaign. Also, ActBlue.com has a mechanism set up where you can make a contribution that will be divided equally between the two campaigns. And of course, you can also reach out directly to those candidates' campaigns yourselves. If you do have an extra $5, $10, $20, you can give it to KBOO. You can give it to the Senate campaigns in Georgia.
And you can also give to Fair Fight, Georgia, Stacey Abrams coalition that is really working on the litigation, legislation, and advocacy space to get more voters registered, specifically new voters, younger voters, who oftentimes pretty, you know, critically in this place vote Democratic and have progressive ideas and views that they use, and they step into the voting booth with those ideas in their minds. So there's lots of ways that you can get involved. I think, you know, the next 12 months of the situation that we're in really hinges on having the ability to move things forward without Mitch McConnell in the way.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And on a few things would give me more pleasure on a personal level than watching him, you know, wave his stumpy little arms in impotent fury. That would just make me so happy. So do it for Abe, if, you know, for no other reason. And before we close out the show today, I want to again reiterate a call that we've put out on this program many times, and that is please resist the temptation to gather in groups this holiday season. Just stay home, sit this one out. Spend Christmas with your small nuclear family if you have one. If you have to be by yourself, my heart goes out to you, but it's better to be by yourself this holiday season so that you can have many more holiday seasons to come with those who you cherish most in this world. So please, please, please stay home and stay safe, everybody.
And in lieu of having those big holiday gatherings where you give lots of gifts to people who probably don't need anything, if you do have additional funds, please fund local organizations that are serving the common good, mutual aid organizations, the Oregon Food Bank, other organizations that are here to help people get through this really challenging time. That's something that I'm doing. I'm not having a huge, you know, family gathering. We're going to gather on Zoom. And, you know, make it what it is this time around so that potentially when things get back to normal, we can travel and visit with each other. But if you do have any additional resources, time, can support other organizations that are really serving up the needs of our community members and neighbors, please do that.
Yes. And we do need to reiterate, too, that this has nothing to do with an imposition on your individual rights or your civil liberties. This is not about the government being heavy-handed with what you can and cannot do. This is all about you making a rational decision to protect yourself, to protect your family, to protect your community. These are desperate times, and they require us to adapt. They require us to be flexible, rational, thinking people. It requires us to think through the consequences of going to that big family gathering and opt not to do it because it's the right choice. This is not about your freedoms. You don't need to pick up an AR-15 and go to the Capitol in Salem. I guarantee you, that's not a necessary option at this point. Just be safe. And I think that pretty much brings us to the end of the show. Any parting words for us, Tracy?
No, just enjoy your time. If you have access to Zoom or FaceTime or whatever, make sure you check in with our elders in our communities, our elder neighbors. Check in on those folks. But please, yes, stay safe. Wear a mask. Wash your hands. Keep your distance. Don't go out shopping after Christmas with, you know, your whole family. keep it safe. Shop online. There you go.
Yes. Please, above all, keep yourselves well so that you can call us in the future and ask obnoxious questions. That's what we want for you. Thank you for tuning in. This has been Too Much Information with Abe and Tracy on KBOO 90.7 FM. Have a great day, and we'll be back at you next week.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Have you gotten your flu shot? It's never too late to protect yourself, your family, and your community against the flu. This year, it is more important than ever. Black and African Americans, people of color, pregnant people, people without health insurance or a regular healthcare provider, people with pre-existing conditions like